Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go on what should have been a Moran Monday, but turns out to be a Titanic Tuesday. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go. If you'd like to click on the chat room button, tab, whatever, and wander into the Madcap Multimedia Merry Zany real-time extravaganza that takes place during these 3 hours every Monday through Friday. Yes. Just do that. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in. You'll be greeted by Anatole and Jug of Punch and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space because it must be a nice day, a nice afternoon in Northern California to become Man Cave. And you will also be moderated by longtime veteran, somewhat fatigable, occasional chat room moderator Texas Betsy, who does not fold space. But that's not a thing. Not a problem. Anyway. So it's Titanic Tuesday. It's the 20th day of December, 2016, and this should have not been the beginning of the broadcast week, but it turns out that it is because I wasn't here last night. I wasn't here last night because of server weirdness. And the fact that I then also subsequently had to take my daughter to the dock in a box because, well, it wouldn't be the holidays if, you know, somebody didn't start feeling like crap. And she does. And she has prescriptions and she is trying to get better. So thank you to those of you who have offered kind wishes for her speedy recovery. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, yesterday should have been the first broadcast day of the week. But it wasn't. This is. Yeah. And what this is independent, progressive broadcasting. No ads, nobody hustling any blinds or steel buildings or liquidated floors or bowling balls that can be picked up by Swedish by vacuum cleaners and dropped again on Swedish mattresses. No buy gold now, none of that. Just 3 hours of uninterrupted. Yeah, it's the ads that do the interrupting. 3 hours of uninterrupted progressive thought, news, etc., commentary, your calls, your ideas, whatever's motivating you. It's all here on this Titanic Tuesday. And you are welcome here in a little bit to offer such participation as you wish. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast effort. And well, that means that you're the reason this broadcast goes forward. Because of the lack of those aforementioned ads. We try to raise $200 every evening. Works out to about $66.66 per per hour. And because of last night, which was no fault of anybody, we find ourselves, you know, in a start-of-the-week hole. We did manage to close that hole, that gap, over the weekend, and I'm very, because we ended in a hole last week, too. I'm very pleased to say that we were okay for getting started last night, and then... So we, but thanks to Bill, and thanks to Dave, and thanks to Harold. Here, let me just go through the subscribers real quick for this here particular day. Yeah, there we go. Thanks to Carl. And Harold, as noted, the president and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thanks to Bernice, who says, Bob, you're funny, intelligent, wonderful, and so are your callers. Amazing. I'm so happy to have found you. Thank you, Bernice. And thank you for helping keep this all on the air. Anyway, what would have been a $400 hole is a $350 hole. Thank you very kindly. So 10 at 35, 35 at 10, and the rest of the mathematics, 1 at 350. 2 at 175. 4 at 8750. And beyond that, my head starts hurting. But we need to raise $350 this evening. So thank you very, very kindly in advance for keeping progressive broadcasting of the hillbilly variety on the air. And I would kind of like to have been on the air last night, considering all the considering what happened yesterday. Yesterday was the day that I predicted when the Electoral College didn't do a damn thing about the presidential election, and instead we can now finally say that Donald J. Trump, billionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a golf course and a plane, Pooty Poot's little chew toy, grifter extraordinaire, reality television star, former WWE or whatever, wrestling aficionado, is the president-elect of the United States of America. That was not possible before yesterday, but now it is. And so there we are. Sorry if I'm not just real excited. I think we're all just trying to come to terms with what's going to happen to our country. I keep going back to the, what was his name, Gray? In 1914, who said the lights have gone out across Europe, and I fear we shall not see them relit again in our lives. And it doesn't... You know, the question now becomes one of how do we resist? How do we not collaborate? It's been the question all along, but we've all been sort of clinging to a faint and vague hope that some sort of deus ex machina would swing out on the crane from offstage and we'd all be saved. I know I'm not the only one feeling like this. got a note here. From Jen in Australia. And it kind of lets me know I'm not alone. She says, the anxiety is making me physically ill. I can only imagine the outbreaks up there of mysterious joint pain, stomach ailments, hair thinning, and migraines. I've been told I have chronic check-the-webitis. I'll be gardening, and even with crud on my boots, we'll make excuses to scoot up to the house. So maybe the all-day rise pizza dough needs stirring. It doesn't, but hey, while I'm up here, can't hurt to check if the edict has been delivered, and if so, is it to not seat a madman because the Constitution dictates, or to seat a madman because the Constitution dictates? Which optic will the press decide best suits? Warning, Jen notes. Check the webitis is contagious. Arthur has it now. We both had our diagnosis confirmed yesterday when Stretch, my unofficial shrink, found us at the laptop pestering people. She schooled us on obsession, explaining that people start behaviors for healthy reasons, example, checking on Bernie's stats every hour during the end of the primary, but continue the behavior for different reasons, which can develop into the manias, phobias, compulsions, and other psychopathies, such as checking the web every 5 minutes to see if plugs has been unplugged. At the very least, I'm getting carpal tunnel from repeatedly holding up my palm to the screen to block pics of that fucking mouth of his. Bill Maher once morphed Plug's face with an orangutan. Whatcha bet there'll be posters of that image superimposed over a pile of bananas with humiliating captions. Oh, my stomach. So, it's not just me. And yesterday was weird. And it was weird not just for the Electoral College. It was weird because of what happened in Ankara, Turkey, where at an art gallery opening of a show called Russia Through Turkish Eyes, the ambassador from Russia to Turkey stood up to make some remarks, and a very nicely dressed, clean-shaven, youngish man in a suit who had just sort of been hanging out, looked like maybe he was part of the gallery team, blew the hell out of the Russian ambassador. Which I'm sure will have, like, you know, no repercussions at all. Hey, right? Oh, I didn't know that. Ron in Raleigh tells me that in wrestling parlance, during Donald Trump during his turn in the WWE was, in the jargon, a heel. Not much of a stretch for Orange Crush. Two. No, no stretch at all. Not a lot of method acting going on there. But that happened, and then, of course, some asshole with a truck decided to ram the Weihnachtsmarkt in Berlin. And it just, there's a feeling of coming apartness to it all. There's something about a day like yesterday that's reminiscent of a poem by Yeats, William Butler Yeats, courtesy of the year 1919, as the First World War had come to a close. William Butler Yeats wrote, "Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world, the blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall. Lock her up. Lock her up. Lock her up. Huh? Surely, some revelation is at hand. Surely, the second coming is at hand. The second coming! Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. A waste of desert sand. A shape with lion body and the head of a man. A gaze blank and pitiless as the sun is moving its slow thighs while all about it wind shadows of the indignant wind, not wind, wind, is moving its slow thighs while all about it wind shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle, and what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born. Yeats was an Irishman, wasn't he? Look, say what you will for the degree to which religion screws up people's heads. But damned if sometimes it doesn't provide some amazing metaphors. It's 1919. The First World War is over, and William Butler Yeats still feels a sense of profound dis-ease. Because the thing about the ends of wars is that the pieces must then be picked up. And in all those shattered pieces lying about, you see the latent form of another coming carnage. A shape with lion body and the head of a man. A gaze blank and pitiless as the sun. Slow thighs. Is it just me, or does that sound like somebody we know? That's what I thought. And we've got plenty of Titanic intellect to consider this evening. Thank you very kindly, Luda, for jumping in and getting us started this evening. Let's see, that's $340.23. $340.23 to go now. $340.23. Thank you, Luda, for getting us started. Ron says, not much in the way of repercussions. You might think that a Turkish policeman busting a cap in a Russian diplomat would cause all manner of fecal matter to hit the fan. Well, you'd be wrong. Russia, Turkey, and Iran sat down today in a confab to work out their problems in a civilized fashion. Imagine that. And Berlin. And the fact that we cannot, on the other hand, muster up an election in a civilized fashion. Meanwhile, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini thank you tour continues. Thought you might appreciate a little... No, you're not going to appreciate this. You're not going to like this at all. But we probably ought to be paying attention to this just the same. It was at his Clavering rally in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where Donald Trump, with a black guy in a MAGA hat right behind him, and a black woman to his immediate left, and a black child over the black guy's shoulder, said this. Ah, damn it. We're going to go through this now? Well, I'll just have to read it to you instead of letting you hear it from Trump's own filthy mouth. And the African-American community was great to us. They came through bigly, bigly. And frankly, if they had any doubt, they didn't vote. And that was almost as good because a lot of people didn't show up. You got that? He thanked African Americans for not voting. Beautiful, isn't it? Yeah, Carol Baker, I think you're right. That's not a victory tour. Those are rallies, reminiscent of the kind the Führer used to hold. Luda says, I hope this helps a bit. It does. It does indeed. I know it's not much, but every little bit does help, and it does. P.S., Luda says, Trump lost by 3 million votes, and the Electoral College still took the easy way out, little bitches. Well, they all didn't. Some Clinton electors voted for, what, Colin Powell? And in the hopes of sending a message to, say, Trump electors that it would be okay not to vote for Trump, but, you know, party first. The Trump pansies have that ferrous tang of blood in their mouths, and they're looking forward to drinking it by the bucketful. Sad to say, but, you know, true. Oh, I had this saved from yesterday. Oh, by the way, there's some breaking news. This happened shortly before I went on air. Turns out that the Obama administration, President Obama himself, had at least one little dig to send to Benito Chito, using a 1953 law called the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act. President Not Sure took unilateral action and banned offshore drilling along the Atlantic seaboard all the way to Maine and along the federally owned waters, you know, owned by we the people of the United States, in the Arctic off the Alaskan coast. The Atlantic seaboard ban extends from Virginia to Maine, and it's and the ban applies to much, a great deal, perhaps a majority even, of the Alaskan coastline. It is. It was a bit of groundbreaking. Well, it doesn't really work in the water, but still, it was a bit of. It was unprecedented, not unprecedented. Donald, pay attention. Art of word knowing, you know. Yeah. So what it means is that there can't be any offshore drilling in the entire designated area. And the Obama administration feels like it's on pretty solid legal footing. Yeah, I know. And at the same time, Justin Trudeau in Canada took similar action. So that would kind of create a pincer around the actual North Pole. Huh. Now, meanwhile, they're having the right winger and the Trumpanzees are having a hissy. A jackass from the American Petroleum Institute by the name of Andrew Radford, who goes by the title Senior Policy Advisor. You remember the American Petroleum Institute? It's the front group funded by the poisoners and the frackers and the blasters and the drillers and the pipeliners and the American Petroleum Institute and the Koch brothers. Radford said that we don't see how this could be permanent. Similar to how President Bush issued a memo in 2008 to add areas back in that Bill Clinton had taken out of consideration for drilling, we're hopeful that the Trump administration will take a look at this to reverse that decision, and we look forward to working with them to make that happen. I don't know, does it feel like too little, too late to you? I mean, I'd like for this to be real. Even given the statement that President Obama made, get the hockey puck. You're going to want it. These actions and Canada's parallel actions protect a sensitive and unique ecosystem that is unlike any other region on Earth. They reflect the scientific assessment that even with the high safety standards that both our countries have put in place, the risks of an oil spill in this region are significant, and our ability to clean up from a spill in the region's harsh conditions is limited. You know why I'm laughing, right? That part about even with the high safety standards that both of our countries have put in place, the risks of an oil spill are... Well, that part's true. The risks of an oil spill are significant. And our ability to clean up from a spill, read we the people, because by when there's a spill, naturally the oil companies will go all deadbeat, are significant. And the ability to clean it is hard, it's limited ability. Mm-hmm. But it's that line about the high safety standards that both countries have put in place on drilling operations. Ask people in the tar sands hellscape about those high safety standards. Or at any of the vast number of places where pipelines have ruptured and burst and spilled and dumped and poured and disastered all over, say, North Dakota, ask them. Or we could ask about those high safety, those rigorous safety requirements in places like Alabama, where one pipeline ruptured and, you know, blew up. About 98% of federally owned Arctic waters, about 115 million acres, are covered in this declaration. There's lots of polar bears there and bowhead whales. Off the Atlantic coast, coral canyons, home to unique deep water corals, rare species of fish, behold the coelacanth. And rest assured that people like Benito Cheeto and Scott Pruitt and various and sundry other scum-sucking hydrocarbon monsters will do whatever they can to make sure that we go up there and shit all over the Arctic and the Atlantic seaboard because money. But, you know, he made the effort. We can at least do a little golf clap for that, can't we? Yeah. Thank you very kindly, Rob. We are off and running. $340 and $330 and 23 cents now. $330.23 that we've got to go in fundraising. Note coming from Jen. Morning, Jen. Or good afternoon, good evening. I forget. Resist, yes. Hell no. Don't collaborate. Obstruct, indeed. But I see two options. Can't contemplate the third, total annihilation. But I see two options. The pain can take 4 long, slow years or 4 months. Yes, healthcare mayhem will be unleashed. An assault on Social Security, tax cuts for the uber-wealthy. That default the Freedom Caucus has been thirsting for since Ted Cruz butchered and made our ears bleed with green eggs and ham. But since the shitstorm is coming, I say bring it all on, all at once. Get it over with. Bring it on in the first month and bring him down. This egg is just itching to crack. Let's crack it, tweet him, bait him, egg him on, stress him out, and cause the complete meltdown that the entire globe is now popping the corn and pulling up a seat to watch. Well, I know, Jen. If you could, there's a lot of people out there now. If it was possible to tweet Donald Trump into a stroke, there's a lot of people doing their dead level best to make that happen. Not the least among whom is Donald Trump, who is such a shallow thing that he gets himself all worked up at 8 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, sending out tweets. It was interesting to see him go after Bill Clinton. Oh well. Bill Clinton, Jesus Christ, Hillary Clinton, oh my God, oh, she's the devil, oh, Goldman Sachs, oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry. Jen notes, there's hope to be found in listening to an archived Majority Report interview of Attorney Thomas Geoghegan by Sam Cedar, the guerrilla state strategy for fighting Trump. One, Jim, is his take on the election. We got plugged because half the country didn't vote. He offers a strategy for 2018, make voting mandatory in as many states as possible. He calculated that the Democrats would have won handily had voting been mandatory in blue states. I loathe that color coding thing. I understand that. My guess is you're going to have a real hard time creating mandatory voting under the understanding of the First Amendment that we presently have. Interesting. Angry just sent something along that maybe you're aware of. I wasn't. A senior Russian diplomat was shot dead in a flat in Moscow hours before the assassination of the ambassador in Turkey, according to The Independent. Local media reported a senior civil servant of the foreign ministry was found dead at his home in the Balaklavsky Prospect apartment block with a bullet wound in the head. The victim has since been named as Peter Polshikov, 56, who was the chief advisor to the Latin American department at the ministry. In a statement, the Russian Foreign Affairs Ministry expressed their condolences to Mr. Polishikov's family, but said his death was not related to his work. They have not. The Russian government has not yet decided if he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape. So that. And so many other things. Things left over from yesterday as well as things for today. Did you happen to catch this one? Because this is a real Lulu. There's a new series coming on A&E. No, this is not from The Onion. Over on the A&E network, which has given us so much high-quality programming over the years. Yeah, that's sarcasm. Over on A&E, starting on Tuesday, January the 10th, we're getting a new reality TV show. Yeah, imagine. It's going to be about, there's going to be several different families involved in it. And according to the Sunday New York Times, the program's been in development for well over a year. And I know we're all going to want to tune in. I mean, sure, we were talking about some online TV shows, things like, I've got Hell on Wheels on the list now. Been watching The Scottish Bodice Ripper. Enjoyed Black Sails. I can't do documentaries all the time because it just gets too goddamn grim. But golly gee, I think I'm going to be tuning in for this. This is special. I mean, this is a program that's going to get right to the heart of the American experience. I mean, in the earliest days of 2017, who wouldn't want to tune into a program called Generation KKK? I wish I was joking. One of the publicity photos shows a big old redneck, close-cropped haired white man with a red face and a whole bunch of tattoos, a hugging of another close-cropped headed red-faced white man. That's just a hugging, yes. This is not a joke. A&E is going to normalize the Klan starting in January. And I don't know about you, but I find that deeply, creepily disturbing. White supremacy just keeps getting normaler and normaler around here, doesn't it? Want to be fun when it's so normal that all the people who were Klansmen all along just jump right out and start proudly announcing it? Yeah, no kidding. According to the Salon article, two of the initial episodes of Generation KKK reveal a loftier intent than what the provocative title implies, in that they immediately set up the series' mission as one of anti-racist activism, focusing closely on the members of Klan families who want out, mostly mothers and children, as opposed to exposing the rituals and intentions of leaders such as Stephen Howard, the Imperial Wizard of the North Mississippi White Knights. As the author of this article, namely Melanie McFarland, points out, it may have a noble purpose. It also runs the risk of a sort of law of unintended consequences effect. Wonder how long it'll be before some Klan merch shows up down to the Rippy Mart next to the Duck Dynasty stuff. One of the Klansmen, a guy whose last name is Howard, said one of his goals is to normalize the Klan as much as possible and become as famous as David Duke. I want to see him saying my name at the presidential debates, he says with a grin on his face. Yeah. So, the debate may not quite be over. We may find out that I was right all along, that there are a hell of a lot more of those economically anxious Trump voters who really are this way. I keep getting pushback on that issue. But I'm gonna stick by my initial impressions and my suspicions until they are proven otherwise wrong. I was told by Todd in an email today that I'm getting it all wrong. That we can't just look at the Trump administration will crash and burn, Todd says, if we can just keep our powder dry and split GOP and wait until he breaks the alt-right promises, the wall, the repeal of PPACA, tearing up the Iran deal, and the forgotten man domestic promises. Gee, Trump pansies over time understand that the carrier deal is an optic one-off and is his. The GOP domestic economic policies are old Reaganomics from 1981. Gee, after a generation and a half, folks will painfully and finally wake up. I can't find the exact exact language here, but it was in one of the emails. In other words, I'm supposed to start seeing. Oh, maybe it's here. In the ordering of why, I cannot put the economic factors behind racism, sexism, xenophobia, and neophobia, fill in the blank, for they are the first derivatives for the defense of property or economic class pacification. In other words, I'm supposed to pretend that the Klansmen, well, that there just aren't as many of them as I think there are. We went over that. I think there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them that, and again, I'm sorry. I guess I'm going over ground that's already been plowed. But until I see a whole bunch of those economically anxious Trump voters say, "Oh hell no! I will do everything in my power to make sure that the Klansmen and the neo Nazis and Steve Bannon and Richard Spencer and all these other sick racist freaks don't have any voice in our government." Until I see that, I'm sticking by my thesis. I just am. Because the fact of the matter is, as we noted Friday evening, there was a lot of economic anxiety under George W. Bush, too. Right? But it only became a thing once that one in our White House went into office. I don't know. We'll just wait and see. Under the subject line, shit just keeps getting stranger. Ron and Raleigh says, I don't know what the hell's going on. Maybe you could explain this to me with a link to an article from McClatchy. North Carolina's Senator Burr backs federal program to investigate Jim Crow-era lynchings. Really? We're going to investigate? Well, okay then. A bipartisan group of lawmakers, including North Carolina Senator, Senior Republican U.S. Senator Richard Burr, are close to extending the life of the Department of Justice program designed to solve cold cases where racism was likely a motive. The Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crimes Reauthorization Act could be one of the final pieces of legislation President Obama signs into law before leaving office. The U.S. House and Senate passed the bill last week by voice vote with unanimous support. This is a nice little diversionary. Well, hell, we voted to authorize investigations of 70-year-old lynchings. See, that proves we ain't. And meanwhile, you know, people are tuning in to Generation KKK. Best I got. Oh, another little we thought we'd heard the last of Jeb Bush, didn't we? We were wrong. We were really wrong. So, you know Scott Pruitt, the science denier, not just climate science, lots of science. The science denier who has been named to be head of the EPA. Well, apparently Jeb Bush still has enough clout with Chicken Noodle News to get them to publish his op-eds. When Scott Pruitt and I assembled a Restoring Federalism Task Force last year, what the fuck is that even? He headlined the plan, Putting Washington in Its Place. Those five words sum up exactly what the American people were clamoring for in this election, a dramatic shift of power out of a broken Washington and back into the hands of the people. At Koch Industries. No, I added the at Koch Industries part. Damn, that's what the people, they were clamoring for the EPA to be shut down? Well, some bitch. I keep being told they were clamoring because they were full of economic anxiety that made them spray paint swastikas on baseball dugouts. I can't keep track. I'm I'm just getting loster. But Jebya, who is trying to get back into the apparently trying to get back into the good graces of Benito Cheeto. I cannot think of a person more suited to lead the Environmental Protection Agency than Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, someone who understands how to rein in an out-of-control bureaucracy and ensure that Washington focuses solely on its core functions. Imagine that. I think the paragraph would have been complete. We could have just put a period after "I cannot think," and we would have had Jebya there, in his all in all. But Jebya can't think of a person more suited to lead the Environmental Protection Agency than someone who despises the idea of protecting the environment. And I got to thinking about it, because you don't want to live inside my skull. But isn't it interesting? Okay, after the EPA was created, the Environmental Protection Agency, whose name, curiously, is not the Corporate Protection Agency. No, that'd be redundant. That's the whole goddamn government. No, it's the Environmental Protection Agency, which means that its core mandate is to protect the environment and the people who live in it. Well, states under various statutes then had to create their own state-level organizations. And what's particularly fascinating about that is that in some states, they eschewed the idea of protecting the environment altogether. That's why, for instance, in places like Alabama, you've got the Alabama Department of Environmental Quality and the Texas Department of Environmental Quality. Oh, we've got a quality environment in Texas, I'm here to tell you. I mean, we ain't had but one fertilizer factory blow up in the last 10 years or so. That's some quality environment right there. Yep, same thing over here in Alabama. We've only had one gigantic explosion of a gas pipeline. We did have that train derailment and giant balls of flame shooting in the air from the bomb train there a couple year ago. But I'd say we got a pretty good track record of having some quality environment in Alabama. Then that idea of making sure ensure that Washington focuses solely on its core functions. Careful there, Jebya, your nose is getting all brown. Columba's not going to like that. So, in other words, protecting the environment is not a core function of the federal government. One wonders what those core functions are. Well, you know, protecting Jebya's wealth. Ginning up the occasional war to drive stock prices up, that kind of thing. Pruitt and I share a common vision for empowering the states and limiting the intrusion of the federal government in every area of our lives. Yeah, unless, of course, it's intruding in the area of American women's lives in relation to, you know, decisions about what to do about the reproductive functions of their own bodies. Then we can intrude. He understands that a government closest to the people is best able to serve their interests. Yeah, because Scott Pruitt's so close to the people. Wonder if Scott Pruitt's ever opened his tap and had sludgy black filth come out of it instead of water. Reckon? Nah, me neither. Our country has been held back over the past 8 years because the appropriate balance between federal and state powers has become totally skewed. Individual liberty and our constitutional order have been threatened. Yeah, by, you know, that one. Our constitutional liberty to drink poisoned water, our constitutional liberty to have millions of gallons of toxic filth flow into our aquifers, our constitutional liberty to breathe air that doesn't kill us. But then again, the constitutional liberty to make sure that they can tell a woman what to do with her reproductive organs, that's a different thing. The far left has tried to distort Pruitt's views in a lame attempt to make him into an anti-science boogeyman. Well, it really didn't require any attempt at all. If it quacks like a duck and
quack,
yeah, and it gets covered in oil like a duck and it dies like an oil-covered duck, it's a duck. The Scott Pruitt I know is far from it. Unlike liberals who want to shut down any rational debate about climate change. Okay, I think before we can shut it down, a rational debate about climate change has to actually exist. Pruitt has acknowledged human impact on the climate and supports a robust discussion about its effects and what the government should and shouldn't do to address it. A robust discussion, just no action. And what the government shouldn't do? Anything. In a 2013 speech, Pruitt demonstrated he understood the proper role of the EPA, completely repudiating Democrats' ludicrous claims about how he would lead the agency. May I say this to you, and please hear me, my heart on this. It's not good for us to say that the EPA doesn't have any role, because just think about it. You have a power plant in Arkansas that's burning coal irresponsibly or inconsistent with the statute. Statue? And it comes over to Oklahoma and Texas, so there's a role for the EPA. It's just that they assert themselves in ways that are above that role. Oh my God. In 2013, Scott Pruitt apparently called the EPA uppity. Yeah, I know. Carol Baker with the line. Far left. What far left? Ha! Meanwhile, Gerald says, excuse me, but that's a lie. There is no far left. Oh, well, yeah, I guess there are. There just ain't a hell of a lot of them. Jill Stein got 1.7% of the vote. But there were enough of them in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin to get more votes for Stein than Trump's margin of victory over Hillary, therefore ensuring that, oh my God, we're back to the nightmare at the beginning of the program, Donald Trump's going to be fucking president. Jen points out, Floridians who robustly misconstrue the realities of climate change are particularly insane. Fuck you, Jeb. 2000 is tattooed on your ass. Go get in the bus with Billy. At the EPA, Pruitt will balance the importance of protecting our environment, even though he's not a scientist, ensuring clean air and water, and being good stewards of our natural resources, with maximizing the ability of free people to innovate and create without interference from the federal government. You know, because that's really the name of the agency. It's the Free People Innovating Maximization Agency, not the Environmental Protection Agency. I know Pruitt will be successful. Wait a minute. Bite down on that hockey puck, would you please? I know Putin will... why would I say Putin? I know Pruitt will be successful because I went through this process firsthand running for governor in Florida. Many Democrats claimed that my views were extreme and that I would ruin our beautiful and unique habitat. What they found was exactly the opposite. Applying conservative principles, we streamlined the bureaucracy, saved the state money, and invested in Florida's environment, including setting out on a historic effort to restore America's Everglades, something the federal government had failed to do. And now, of course, in Florida, it is illegal if you work for the state of Florida to even utter or breathe the words climate change or sea level rise. This model can be replicated in Washington under an administrator, Scott Pruitt. He will put long overdue limits on rulemakers and roll back those that are choking economic growth. He will ensure that we conserve our natural habitats and resources while unleashing an energy revolution that will bring millions of jobs to our country. Wait, bring millions of jobs to our country? Who's going to come to our country to do the jobs? Wait a minute. Where are they going to be brought from? Kuwait? Saudi Arabia? Nigeria? Venezuela? Canada? What a dipshit. Funny how he didn't think so poorly of big government when he was messing around in the private in the private business and the private lives of the Schiavo family. Yeah, I know. But you can't blame him. The Bushies can't stand to be out of power. Oh, I know. The Bushies are not nearly as bad as those power-hungry goddamn Clintons. Oh, Jesus, Hillary Clinton. Oh, my God. Goldman Sachs. Oligarchy. Emails. Benghazi. Yeah. But the Bushies want some power. They can't stand to be out of it. And well, you know, dim leader was president, and every time, I mean, it's Christmas time. He probably wrote this from Kenny Bunkport, where George was giving him noogies in his sleep. I got to be the president. You got to be called low energy. Pissant. There have been several strong appointments by President-elect Donald Trump, and Scott Pruitt is among the very best because I know he will pursue meaningful reforms that will improve people's lives. Yeah, that's what I call it when air gets dirtier and water becomes filthier and undrinkable. Yeah, that's life improvement. Yeah, when pipelines get rammed down, well, you get my meaning. And I mean, and those quality appointments. Hey, we just found out over the weekend that Rex Tillerson, and you'll forgive me, I know he's an ExxonMobil CEO, he's the ExxonMobil CEO, but that name just begs to be a televangelist, doesn't it? Mornings with Jesus with Reverend Rex Tillerson. No. How about Hydrocarbon Faith Report with the Reverend Brother Minister Rex Tillerson? See? Works, doesn't it? It's a beautiful thing. So here we are at the top of the hour. We have $330.23 to raise on the evening to stay out of the hole, keep the lights on, etc., etc. 330.23. I just figured I'd share that precious little op-ed from Jebya because we hadn't heard from him in a while. And those job-killing regulations? Well, there's a fresh hissy out there because in addition to the Arctic drilling thing, the job-killing EPA finalized a rule in the last few days. And it kind of matters in the neck of the woods where I live. Mm-hmm. The Department of the Interior released final regulations that were designed to minimize the impacts to surface water and groundwater from coal mining. It's called the Stream Protection Rule. Now, let's make something very, very clear. The Stream Protection Rule is a thing. It's a step. It took 7 years to accomplish. but it won't stop mountaintop removal. In a statement, Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know, said, CRMW is glad that the meetings and testimony that our members and allies have participated in for 7 years have finally resulted in the Stream Protection Rule. This rule, if enforced, will provide significant protection for some of our vulnerable Appalachian water sources. It will not, however, end the ongoing devastation and public health impacts imposed by mountaintop removal coal mining. We call upon regulatory agencies such as the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, to vigorously enforce the provisions of the Stream Protection Rule rather than routinely granting variances as they did with the previous Stream Buffer Zone Rule. We further call upon Congress to pass the Appalachian Community Health Emergency, AIC Act, to protect our citizens and put an end to the deadly practice of mountaintop removal. So, we've got that going for us, and the poisoners and polluters and such like have already sworn eternal vengeance against the idea of clean water. Oh, thank you, Steve, in New York. Bishop of Black Gold, Rex Tillerson. I like that. Subject line, oiled up. Might as well be a Russian plot far and away beyond our ability to fathom with a Secretary of State who may as well be a Secretary of Petroleum. This is just the slouching thing come home in continuance of the oil wars begatten the mad boiling wastelands of the Middle East. Hail Rexon. Regards, Steve, in China. Michael in Madison says, I'll double down on your thesis and go so far as to say Richard Spencer is my leading pick right now for president in 2024. He's already contemplating a congressional run. If we don't get our heads out of our asses about the sleeping giant that has been awoken, I think it's a real possibility. Hell, he may even lose the popular vote by twice the Clinton-Trump margin, but that doesn't mean he won't win the Electoral College. After 8 years of grift and corruption, the economically anxious whites will be clamoring for the real thing, i.e. that great white America that Trump promised them. Subject line, cold cases, bullshit. Going back to the story that Ron and Raleigh sent us. James says, that's about keeping us looking at the past to drain any resources that could be used to prosecute current criminals, many of whom are holding office disguised with the R, bumfuck, moniker. Oh, yeah, and there is some graft out there. Maybe we'll get around to talking about that at some point during the program. Okay, yeah. So 3:30:23 to go fundraising for this evening to get out of a bad, ugly, nasty, vile hole. And coming up, we've got the Green News Report for this evening. We get Green News Reports tonight and Thursday, and then next week not so much, up into January, which is not so far away anymore. Every day brings us a little closer to January 20th, doesn't it? Carol with a question. Do we get to give deadbeat dad Joe Walsh extra credit for acknowledging California as a state? I guess we take our victories where we can find them, don't we? Yeah. 10 past the hour, little break. And then we'll come back to your calls. You know how to reach the program if you are so inclined. 304-574-8178 or the stress line, 304-663-4676. And from anywhere on the planet, that your particular government will let you do it. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. They'll work reasonably well. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
Happy Christmas, Coco. Happy Christmas, Julie.
So this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over. And you won't just be gone. And so this is Christmas. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young,
a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one without any fear.
So so happy Christmas, for black and for white, for yellow and red ones, let's stop all the bad.
A very Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year, let's
It's Tuesday, December 20, 2016.
A study by the Reuters news agency found lead poisoning twice and even four times higher than what was seen in the recent contaminated water crisis in Flint, Michigan.
3,000 American communities have high levels of lead contamination in children.
This business and many other here simply cannot reopen until the city says this water is safe.
Tap water now safe to use in Corpus Christi after acid accident. Interior Department races to protect drinking water from coal mining, plus...
Don't get depressed. Don't get upset. Get organized. Yeah. Get to work.
Scientists rally to protect scientific integrity and research in the coming Trump administration.
All of that science and integrity straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comment.
Trump will nominate ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson to be Secretary of State.
I gotta say, Rex Tillerson could be one of the most oil tycoon names of all time. Right behind Tex Drillerson.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, water, water everywhere, but you can't drink any of it. It's all poison.
Apparently. It is true. A new study of public health records has found 3,000 neighborhoods in the U.S. where children suffer from lead poisoning. The study by Reuters examined neighborhood-level blood test results in federal and state health databases across the country. It found children's lead poisoning rates 2 to 4 times higher than levels measured in the recent water lead contamination crisis in Flint, Michigan. In some locations, up to a third of the children had high lead levels. But these towns are getting little to no attention, indicating a persistent failure to fund and enforce lead abatement programs to remove lead from soils and lead paint in older homes across many states.
Whose responsibility is that, the federal government or the state governments in each of these cases?
It's both, but it's up to the states to actually make it happen.
Well, that's good, because I know Donald Trump is going to make America great again, but he sure as hell isn't going to get the lead out of the water.
In Corpus Christi, tap water is now safe to use again, say city officials, after they lifted a do-not-use order for the city's 300,000 residents and businesses. That happened after an asphalt manufacturer accidentally released a small amount of corrosive acid that may have entered the city's water system. The acid causes respiratory problems and chemical burns on contact. It's the second do-not-use order for Corpus Christi this year. The Obama administration Interior Department on Monday imposed new rules on coal mining near drinking water supplies. 8 years in the making, the stream buffer rule bans coal mining within 100 feet of streams. It prevents coal companies from permanently polluting thousands of miles of streams, and it affects mostly West Virginia, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. It also requires mining companies to restore the land to pre-mining conditions. But the National Mining Association says it plans to fight those new standards in the new Trump administration.
Well, of course they do. But naturally, you think, well, Trump is going to undo that. But the fact is, these rules, that one, 8 years in the making, they take a long time to put in place and a long time to undo, do they not?
Yes, it depends on what stage of the process it's in, but it can be overturned.
And here I was trying to find something to be happy about. Thanks for nothing, Desi.
Meanwhile, at the annual meeting of the American Geophysical Union in San Francisco last week,
there's something to be happy about.
Hundreds of climate and earth system scientists also did something that scientists almost never do. They rallied for scientific integrity. Here's Georgia Tech professor Kim Cobb in a video posted by climatetruth.org.
What we need right now is all of the scientists who care so deeply about their work, about facts and data and truth, to shake off the fear that holds them back. Not thinking about it as a political problem, but thinking about it in defense of science.
It was kind of amazing to see, and good to see, all of these scientists actually out there in the streets rallying. You're right, that is something we do not see very often.
Yes, and U.S. scientists are now establishing backup databases to hold U.S. government scientific research from NASA, NOAA, and other crucial science agencies. While there's been no explicit threat from the incoming Trump administration to remove access to that data, Trump transition advisors have promised big budget cuts for NASA and those other science agencies. Mayors and governors in many states say they are also determined to protect scientific research and integrity. In a fiery speech at the AGU meeting in San Francisco, California Governor Jerry Brown pledged that if the new administration cuts NASA's research funding and satellite programs, California will step in to defend science.
And if Trump turns off his satellites, California will launch its own damn satellite. We're going to collect that data.
Man, all I can say is that it's good to be living in California right now.
Yep.
For what it's worth. Come on out. We'd love to see you before we build up the wall to keep out the Americans. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we didn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Open up that Golden Gate, California, here I come.
20 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn for Titanic Tuesday, the 20th day of December 2016. Just a quick backstory at Gerald's suggestion. You know, I played Happy Christmas War is Over there by John Lennon and Yoko. And, of course, it was December 1980 when John was murdered. And I was on the air. I was just a little baby gospel DJ. And I read the breaking news because UPI sent something like six bells, which is, you know, one or two short of, you know, some sort of massive disaster. I shared it, and I got my job threatened the next day. You don't need to be talking about godless commie hippies like John Lennon on Christian airwaves. So, yeah, I always think about that when I play that song, and I like to play it every year. I like Christmas music, but some of it gets old really, really quick. And others, you know, if you save them for once a year, it's good. It's good stuff. And you know what? Carol Baker's right. She said, I have to give the Confederacy credit. History books say they lost. It took them 155 tenacious years, but they won. Did you hear that Trump henchman Mike Flynn met with the head of an Austrian party founded by Nazis? When you want to excel at something, study the masters. Yeah, I did see that. And you know what's going to be fun is when he goes in for his confirmation hearings, I wonder if any of the Democrats will even have the nerve to bring that up. And then, of course, the right wing, the Republicans will... Well, it sounds to me like you're trying to convict a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian man like Mike Flynn, trying to convict him of guilt by association. I mean, can't a feller meet with a Nazi once in a while without y'all seeing that he's a Nazi? Maybe he was meeting with them to tell them he didn't approve of their Nazi ways. Did you ever think about that? And it's kind of like I'm proud of Jerry. What Brad and Desi were talking about there. I'm proud of Jerry Brown for saying what he said. But you know what? The Trumpanzees would be more than happy to have California do all the heavy lifting, or the heavy liftoffing, regarding science and research and stuff like that. Jesus Christ, California, Alabama, and West Virginia, and Mississippi, and Tennessee and Louisiana and Arkansas and Oklahoma and Texas are already riding your Sunshine State backs for everything that runs their goddamn states. Sure, why don't y'all just take up NASA too? States' rights, y'all. Exactly. All right, let's run over and see what's on Scott and Punky's minds. Hey guys.
Hello. He's bad, bad Jerry Brown, baddest man in the whole damn town. Meaner than a junkyard dog?
Somewhere there's badder than old King Kong in there, too.
Yeah. You were announcing John Lennon's passing on the radio early in your career. My first radio job was at a little one-lung FM station about 45 miles southeast of D.C. in southern Maryland, fishing and tobacco country, if there ever was such a thing. And the two big news events that happened during my almost year at my first radio job in 73, one was the resignation of Spiro T. Agnew, which I always thought was a red-letter day, and the other was the death of Jim Croce. Speaking of bad, bad Leroy Brown. So,
oh, wow, you were on air for that?
Yeah, and I heard the bells. We had AP. We didn't have UPI. We had Associated Press. And the station, to give you an idea how small the station was, it was in what amounts to a quarry built on the rim of the edge of the rim of a rock quarry, okay? And in the front yard was like a 200-foot antenna, okay, or tower with the antenna on top. And it was basically a cottage that had been a small cottage that had been converted into a radio station. And there was a studio, a teeny tiny production room, a couple of offices, and an attic. And that was pretty much it. And at the end of the lane to get to the station itself was a little country store. And the woman, I forget her name, who worked there was a big fan of Engelbert Humperdinck. And she would give me stuff, free food, from the store if I'd play her an Engelbert Humperdinck song every night.
Payola, but, damn it.
Yeah, and that wasn't payola, you know, in the strictest sense. That was basically honoring a request of a faithful listener who thanked me in the only way she could. So, anyway, and I guess the statute of limitations has expired, and I'm not far behind. But anyway, we had an Associated Press machine, news ticker.
Was it the old school teletype with the hard banging keys? I mean, later on, yes. You know, they'd come along with the dot matrix printer, but we had the old, I mean, it weighed a ton. It had an iron housing, yeah. And it crank, crank, bang, 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 bang. And there were physical bells there, you know, ding, 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 ding.
And there was no clean or efficient way to change the goddamn ribbon.
No, okay? No, you were going home looking like you'd spent the night in the coal mine.
Exactly. At least your hands and upper lower arms. But this thing was in the bathroom of the station. In other words, you'd walk into the building. On the left would be the little production room. On the right would be the studio. Okay, the single air studio. A little further back was a door straight ahead. You'd open the door, and it was basically the kitchen of the cottage. And a home-built transmitter, okay, occupied most of the space, but there was an operating kitchen behind the transmitter. And then a little beyond that was the bathroom. And in the bathroom was the AP machine. And someone had put up a little sign next to the, but see, back in those days, when it came to bathroom tissue or facial tissue, they came in pastel colors.
And yes, they did. Pinks, blues.
Oh, yes.
Sort of lovely. A mute lime green.
Yes. Lovely colors.
The yellow was problematic.
Well, yes. But across from the commode was the toilet tissue roll, and on a little sign, hand-lettered, a cart label for one of the audio carts, someone had printed, not for AP use. And we also always bought the pastel yellow toilet tissue because it was the closest match we could find to the paper that would continuously run, the fan-fed paper continuously running up and through.
Had fan-fed. See, mine was in rolls.
No, we had fan-fed that came in these humongously heavy boxes, and you'd have to go up to the attic and cart down one of these boxes when the paper was running low.
Yeah, eventually they would go onto a dot matrix printer and the fan feed. But it was fan-fed, you know, tractor paper.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
But no, this stuff was yellow newsprint.
Yeah, you know, pretty much.
And it made a terrible racket. And I mean, it was great for when you were doing the news. We could chuka 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 clack 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 clack. You know, you sounded like a real, you know, boy newscaster.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Somewhere in a box, I think I still have all of that. Is the word for that fool's cap? That kind of paper? I don't know.
It might be. I've heard that word before, and I've heard it associated with paper. It was a little heavier than newsprint because it had to be somewhat durable. Okay.
Yeah. There was more substance to it. But somewhere in a box, I have all of those alerts on the killing of John Lennon.
Oh, wow.
If the ink hasn't completely faded off of them.
Yeah. Well, they knew, the other people on the staff knew that changing the ribbon was my least favorite thing.
Okay? Oh, it was everybody's least favorite thing. And you would do every... Did you ever cheat and wind the little bastard backwards so the morning shift guy would have to deal with it? Because yes. I did.
Yes. But they would... Invariably, the fate would fall to me to change the ribbon because I worked the 6 to midnight shift. And we signed off at midnight.
So did we.
And the guy in the morning at 6 didn't want to...
Now signs off another broadcast day. Yes. Operates on a frequency of 106.3 megahertz with a tower on Colbert Mountain. And yep.
WESM FM, Prince Frederick, Maryland, operates on the assigned frequency of 92.7. Is it megacycles or megahertz?
If it was FM, it was megahertz.
Yeah, okay. Under by authority of the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. This concludes this broadcast day. Join us now in the playing of our national anthem. And then you'd crank up the cart with the national anthem. And as soon as the home of the free and the land of the brave faded out, you'd throw the big switch on the transmitter and shut that bastard down for another night.
And you took your readings with your little class three license.
Oh yes.
And did you also have high flight for closing your broadcast day?
The music, no. One of the
two. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth.
Oh yes.
And danced aloft on laughter silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and chased the shouting winds along. Yada yada yada. Reached out my hand at 30,000, at 60,000 feet in a pressurized cabin, reached out my hand and touched the face of God.
Well, yeah, if you open a pressurized cabin, you're going to not only... Gonna
oh, you're going to see him.
You'll meet God in short order. No, we didn't have that. One of the TV stations ran that. And I think William Conrad, the voice on the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons, narrator.
Cannon.
And also, Cannon. And before that, he was Gunsmoke's, Radio Gunsmoke's, Matt Dillon, which was on TV.
And didn't he go on to do Nero Wolf?
Yeah, I believe he did. I believe he did.
And by the way, just as an aside, for people who are wondering why I peremptorily disappeared from the chat room, the production computer decided to crash, so I'll probably be back in the chat room right about the time that the program ends. Right now it's working on updates. Don't turn off your computer. So yeah. Just so people will know and not freak out that, no, we're really still here. I got room on brain cells for high flight. My favorite was always the word from Unity.
Oh, yes.
Because they never seemed particularly preachy, and they actually tried to have a positive, upbeat message from Unity Village, Missouri.
Oh, well, I was married. Not technically married at Unity Village. I was married in January of 86 in my parents' rec room in Alexandria, Virginia. But because I was living in Kansas City at the time, and my wife at the time's family couldn't come to D.C. for the actual wedding, that summer we had a reenactment of it. And at the time we were both Unity attendees. Actually, we attended a Unity church, not the big church on the Country Club Plaza, the home church or mother church, but it was one in the Kansas suburbs. And the pastor was the niece or the granddaughter, I forget which, of the Fillmores, Myrtle and whoever the man was, Fillmore, who began Unity back in the 20s or 30s.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, they had some interesting beliefs. They didn't say death. They said transitioned.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't pass away. You transitioned to the next life or whatever, right?
Well, my very first visit to a Unity church was at the Mother Church on the Country Club Plaza in Kansas City when I first started dating my wife, because she was the one who was into that, okay? And it was on a weeknight, so it was like a midweek prayer service. And it wasn't like any prayer service that I had ever attended in like a Baptist church or a Pentecostal church. The guy got up, or the woman got up, and gave a talk, and then they had a musical interlude, and it was this rather substantial woman, rather hefty, kind of short, kind of hefty, with an accordion.
Oh, good. I'm so glad that...
And she got up, and she played whatever her inspirational number was, and the smile never left her beatific face, okay? And I nudged my wife, and I said, come on, nobody is that perpetually happy without a lot of booze or a lot of good drugs, you know? And she shushed me, you know, because it was deathly seriously, or transitionally seriously, you know, in my ex's, my wife at the time, my fiance, whatever, in her estimation. It was big doings, and you have to pay the proper respect. So, but getting back to little radio stations and meter readings, back when I started, you had to take the readings every half hour. Every half hour.
Wow, I got away with it like what, once every couple or so?
Yeah, every 2 hours is what they changed it to. But we would time it at quarter after and quarter of each hour, because there was nothing, it would invariably be during a record. Because if you put it at any other point in the hour, it would conflict with something that you were required to do live on the air.
Right, that require exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, one of these nights, when somebody has just righteously pissed me off, I'll retaliate, as Barack Obama says, at a time and place of my own choosing. You know, he said that Friday, and then the assassination took place yesterday in Turkey, and I was like, "Well, that's a cold son of a gun." that's a cool customer. But anyway, I will play, because I've done it in the past. I will play Jesus, This Is Jimmy, because that was requested every night. Every night that I worked, there was a little old lady who just wanted to hear that song. And, you know, for people of a certain amount of youth, the idea that you might have to actually tune into a radio station to hear a song as opposed to just going and downloading the damn thing that's got to be like talking about, you know, horse and buggy days.
Yeah. Or what's a record? What's an LP? What's a single? Daddy, what's an LP?
Yeah. Daddy, what's a dustbuster?
And most radio people today, the young uns especially, you use some of the old jargon. Daddy, what's a slip cue?
Oh, yeah. And but then again, I don't know if there are any young radio people anymore, because of the degree of automation means that you really don't need young people, as I was, a pimply-faced teenager, learning to be DJs anymore. I don't know how. Yeah. I guess you have to go to college and study broad. Wait a minute, broadcast journalism to get to jock or something like that. I don't know.
Well, and that's the pity of it, because back when I was first starting out, there were plenty of small and even smallish media market stations like rimshot signals on the outskirts of major areas, where if you got hooked up with one, you could go in there, learn to do every conceivable task associated with radio, and then once you build up a little experience, get your copy of broadcasting and look in the ads in the back, okay? And you had to, if you ever advertised in broadcasting classifieds, which I never did, no self-respecting job seeker could place an ad that didn't include the phrase "great pipes."
Oh.
If I had a nickel for everybody who placed an ad with the phrase "great pipes," I would be rich. I could buy my own station.
Well, you had to have those great pipes.
Oh, yes. Punky, what
Punky's
is
got
this?
Great pipes.
P- Punky has got a whistle. He does not have pipes. His little cockatiel head, according to science, is essentially empty, or at least contains cavities, so that when he makes his little shrieks and his songs, it's like a football coach's whistle. I'm not sure what the technical word for that is, but it expands the volume of the noise being made by the whistle so that it carries further. And he could
amplifies?
Amplifies. There you go. Jesus, I'm unaltered, save a couple of cups of weak coffee, you know? So I'm not sure what my excuse is. But I'm glad we were able to take this little journey down.
Oh, those are always fun. Absolutely.
What were you making? And what year would it have been, and what were you making per hour?
I quit in 1981 when I went off to college, and I was making $3.35 an hour.
Oh, you were shitting in high cotton. When I began in...
Oh, hell, there were weeks I got overtime.
Well, I'm sure, because, you know, little stations require you got to just pitch in, because sometimes people will quit and not tell anybody, and you've got four or six more hours to fill.
Well, it was 6 to midnight Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And then I would often do sign-ons on Sunday or Saturday mornings.
Mm. I did that for a short while. I would get off at midnight on a Friday night. My original shift...
Oh, those were the ones that really, really sucked air. Get off at midnight, be back at 6 in the morning.
Oh, but I added a special twist to it. But when they originally hired me in, like, March of 73, I worked Sunday noon to 6, okay, and then Monday through Friday from 6 to midnight, okay? And it just blew the hell out of the weekend.
Oh, no, you can't recover from that.
Well, I'm 19 at the time, driving my little Chevy Vega, okay, 45 miles from where I was living with my
family. Hey, it wasn't a Chevette. Don't bitch.
No. but I finally said, well, look, why don't you let me work my regular Monday through Friday, 6 to midnight, and then do the morning 6 a.m. to noon on Saturday morning, and that will free up enough of a weekend to where I could call it a weekend. So on a Friday night, I would sign off at midnight, jump in the car, drive an hour to one of the bars in D.C., one of the big disco super bars, okay, dance my ass off, drink my ass off until 3 a.m., get in the car, weave my way to some place that was open all night to buy breakfast, eat breakfast, and by this time it's maybe 4:30, quarter to 5.
Time to make the donuts.
Get back in the car, drive another hour to the station, and get there in time enough to crank up the transmitter for another 6 hours of broadcasting. And how I didn't do it for long, but I did manage to do it for a while. And at 19, you're invincible. You can do anything. But I could not even, today, I scarcely imagine it. I couldn't even do the drinking and dancing part, much less 6 hours, dance and drink, and then 6 more hours.
No, I'd say my real salad days came when I got a midnight to 6 gig, and I would get off at 6 o'clock in the morning. I had the golf clubs in the trunk. And I would go immediately to the driving range, hit a couple of buckets of balls just to get warmed up, and then because I was, you know, young and bulletproof, would proceed to play 36 holes of golf walk it. And so by that time, I would be good and exhausted, and I'd come home, lay down, and be able to sleep through the day and get up and go and do the midnight shift all over again.
Mercy.
And then at 6 o'clock... My golf game, it was the best my golf game ever was. And my golf game was never very good.
Yeah.
But it was just peaceful. It was contemplative. It was fun. The golf wasn't particularly expensive. And, you know, good times, man. Good times. By the way, Carol Baker tells me, she says, She says, by the way, I drive by Unity Village every day. It's in Lee's Summit, Missouri.
Yeah, that's Unity Village, but the mother church, Unity Church, or I don't know if it is now, but when I lived there in the
and it's
80s,
not, and Unity Church is not Unitarians, by the way. The no. services sound a little bit Unitarian, but they've got a little. I think the Unity people have a little bit more in the way of dogma and doctrine. But we've got a. I've got a proposal from Carol here for us to consider.
Okay.
Can we change our national motto from "In God We Trust" to "Merca, we're just not that bright"? I will second the motion. We'll move now to the discussion part of the process and see where it goes from there.
Well, I will go along with that with one small amendment. In order to make it fully impactful, bright has to be spelled B-R-I-T-E, and then I'll sign on with it. Great idea. I can see it on the currency.
Yeah, because
now.
that makes the pronunciation a little clearer. It's Merca. We're just not that bright.
Yeah. There you go.
And because we want the people who are most responsible to feel comfortable with their new motto.
Yeah. And they'll know right away what it says, because everybody knows that you spell bright B-R-I-T-E, because it's on that child's toy, the bright lights.
Light, no, the light bright, making pictures light. With light. Yes.
Jeez, my little baby, Shirlene, wants a bright light or light bright or night light. It's one of them things.
I had one of them until I lost all the little colored, all the little transparent colored plastic pigs.
Oh, now she's eating one.
Oh, Jesus.
Hold her up by her ankles, Papa, and slap her back.
No, I think I sense a little bit of frustration in Carol's note. She says, do they sell 2017 calendars by the month? I'm not sure I can commit to a whole year. I suddenly find myself with commitment issues. Yeah, can you take a new year on spec? We'll try January, but I mean, is it, can it be like the old Columbia Record Club deal? You know, we'll take the 1 month for free, and then we can cancel at any time before 90 days are up.
Well, this could very well be an entrepreneurial opportunity for some enterprising young lad or lass. Create a new concern called the Month of the Month Club. And for X number of bucks, we'll send you a month. Not just the little squares with the data number dates in them, but a lovely photograph above the little box with squares and numbers to hang on the wall. And then about five days before the end of each month, if you've returned the little reply card, you'll get the next month's month. The Month of the Month Club.
Which reminds me, I noticed the other day when I had the over-the-air radio on, and, you know, the only thing around here on the AM band is right-wing radio, except for that one station out near Sutton that is apparently programmed by a jock who never came down from the bad acid.
I think I worked with that guy.
Man, anybody who can segue Leonard Skinner into the fucking Carpenters, you got my sympathy, if not my respect.
You got to be the Sultan of segues to get away with that. And there's a way to do it, and you don't have to jingle through it either.
But the thing is, I noticed that, and I tried to think back to when I stopped hearing them. But do you remember the International Star Registry?
Yeah, where you can, they'll put your name and the name of a loved one after whom they have named a star in a registry book.
What better way than to show your love than to name a star after someone? I noticed I'm not here. Whatever happened? Because, you know, if you're going to have an International Star Registry, you kind of need to be sort of perpetual. But I've noticed the ads have fallen off in a big way, and I wonder what happened to them.
Well, probably the FTC got enough complaints.
But the question is, if I name a star, can I also try to get somebody to take me to it?
Ooh, that'd be fun.
because no, I mean, I'm you're a little bit more of a sunny. You know, you live with a cockatiel; it's bound to happen. you've got a little more of a sunshiny disposition than I do, Scott. And it's feeling, I don't know, it's feeling pretty damn grim. So well, if you want to bust out in a chorus of "The sun will come out tomorrow," you're more than welcome to.
No, it is pretty damn grim. But you were mentioning John Lennon and being on the radio, and I thought that I would compare notes with you. You said you were getting what, $3 an hour?
$3.35, damn it.
$3.35. Okay, and that was in like 80, 81, something like that?
It was either $3.15 or $3.35, and that was the minimum wage in 1979, 1980.
Okay, well, in 73, I was making the princely sum of $2.15 an hour and all the promo records I could cart off, okay, which was not a bad deal until the very first Arab oil embargo happened. Because I was living at home with my folks. I was 19 years old. I had no major expenses to speak of.
And suddenly you were buying that 60 cent a gallon gasoline.
Yeah, and it believe me, it went up pretty quickly after that. It got up at some point when I quit in November of 73, it had gotten up to like 70 or 75 cents a gallon, which was outrageous. It was unbelievable.
Goddamn tariffs.
The end times were upon us when that happened. But you mentioned my sunny disposition. I was, and I'll have to send you a photograph to prove it, or if you've seen it on my Facebook, you already know, but I was, at one brief shining moment, Mr. Sunshine. Now, you might ask, what does that $2.15 an hour require me to do in terms of duties? Well, my air shift, my production shift, changing the ribbon in the goddamn AP machine, okay, taking the meter readings, all that stuff. But being a little town station, we used to do remote broadcasts.
There's a lot going on down here. Come on down. Free record Hurry for the up. Next person that comes up. And yeah, I know.
But one of the
10-cent hot dogs.
Yeah. One of the geniuses decided that I would make an ideal station clown. So we rented a clown outfit.
I
bought the clown makeup, okay, went the whole nine yards.
Fortunately for me, that kind of thing was considered demonic by the people who ran my station, so I guess there was an upside. The downside was Jesus, this is Jimmy once a night.
But I was Mr. Sunshine, and they even sprung for a box of 1,000 yellow balloons, because yellow was our sunny station color, with in blue letters WESM FM 92.7, Sunshine Stereo, emblazoned upon each and every balloon. But what they didn't do was spring for a tank of compressed air. Or
yeah, I was going to say, no. No, you got great pipes and good lungs. Get with it.
But I was a pretty heavy smoker back then, Bob. And imagine a big old oaf of a guy like myself, all done up as Mr. Sunshine, the radio station clown. Instead of handing the balloons to the kids and let those little bastards blow them up, I took it upon myself to blow them up for them, especially the little ones. But as a heavy smoker, you can only get away with that for so long.
Yeah, before the head rush kicks in.
Exactly. So, hey, everybody, I think Mr. Sunshine just passed out. Call somebody.
Oh, Mommy, God, look, Mr. Sunshine's turning blue.
All right, okay, I got to do this because I've had a couple of questions. I think you'll be able to hear this. I think I've got it set up so you can. Just tell me real quick if you do. Stand by. Here we go. You got that?
Yeah, I got that.
Okay. You're not going to be okay. I'm just warning you. I mean, I'm not mad at anybody. Although I will note that we've got $300 and $300.23 to go. Thank you very kindly to Charlene for jumping in. Thank you very much indeed. $300.29. If that should all happen to roll in before this song is over, I promise I will not play it for at least a year. But the backstory to this, and there's the politics stuff, and I got stuff, I got stuff. We are not hurting for material this evening. But sometimes it's just good to kind of step away and remember simpler times. And I had an elderly listener who called every night, and she called every jock all day long. And usually she wanted to hear this song. And I'm a soft touch. I mean, I didn't even get free eats down to the chat and chew like you did, okay? This was just the satisfaction of knowing you had made somebody smile. And the artist is Bobby Grove. And she wanted to hear it every night. And it's called Jesus, This Is Jimmy. And we've done this from time to time. Now, wait a minute. I'm not supposed to have those damn sound effects.
Maybe she's calling in to hear it.
No. I gotta fix that real quick. Options. Sounds. Okay, it's not supposed to be enabled. Damn it.
Skype is just more fun some days.
Well, I mean, it's not. Okay, hang on here. No. I don't want it. I wonder how that happened.
Just one of the great mysteries of life.
thanks for the update, Skype. I don't know, but at any rate. Now, she wanted to, this is terrible. This is just awful, all right? But it's Christmas, so, yeah.
Death follows night.
Suicidal yet?
Night follows day.
You're not going to be all right.
This whole world keeps rolling along. What will your answer be? What can you say when Jesus beckons you home?
This is the fun part, by the way. I mean, are you getting an idea?
Oh, yeah. Keep going, man.
Ooh, the steel.
His name was Jimmy. He wasn't very old, about 10 or 11 years since birth. But you wouldn't call life for Jimmy heaven on earth. He lived in a big town in the north part of the nation. His mom and dad had forsaken him, so he had to sell newspapers to stay off starvation.
Now there are adults that have to do that job, not people who are 10 or 11 years on the earth. But
yeah,
saying.
Assuming there are still newspapers.
Yeah, those were the good days. Yeah, true. Assuming there are newspapers to sell. Little Jimmy had to sell bandwidth.
So now Jimmy's abandoned.
Jimmy's been abandoned, right?
Is he crippled? I know that's an incorrect word. But
no. I mean, he's just hopeless and lost and alone.
Is he malnourished?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Are his clothes tattered and torn?
With beyond a doubt. Did you write this?
Has he got a hollow, vacant look in his eye?
Oh, and big old circles under him.
What he needs is Jesus.
Yep, here we go.
Now, Mom and Dad love the nightlife.
I'll never forget the first time we played this, and Peter Godbold was on the air with me, and Peter loved his disco. And they loved the nightlife? They loved to boogie in the disco or out on the town? I love the nightlife.
Jimmy was too much bother. I wonder if they'll still feel the same way when they stand before my heavenly Father.
Yeah, nothing like a little vengeance porn in a miserable song about a sad child. Yeah, that's all right. You love the nightlife, all right. But wait till you stand before my Lord and Savior. He's gonna pinch your little fucking head off. So he's gonna, he's gonna suck the guts right through your necks. That's what he's gonna. I wonder if you'll feel that way then about loving that nightlife and wanting to boogie.
Now down the street by an old gospel mission, Jimmy carried his papers one day. And he heard the preacher say, "Come to the altar. My Jesus will give you a new life and a better way."
Sounds like a nice deal, doesn't it? Now, this is an old gospel mission, so presumably that would be a good thing. I mean, if he'd wandered into some papist Roman Catholic cathedral and they'd actually given him a goddamn bowl of soup, well, we can't have that now, can we?
Or the Hare Krishners, he'd have to wear a robe and shave his head and, you know, dance around the airport.
Well, but we can't have none of that dancing. That goes back to that nightlife in the big northern town. And, of course, it's a northern town because there are a bunch of godless heathens up there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by northern town, he probably means Nashville, okay? I mean, maybe Louisville. Possibly Cincinnati.
Oh, God.
Baby, if you ever wondered whatever became of me. No, sorry.
Sin City Nutty.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimmy's feet were cold, his eyes watering, and inside it might be safer. So Jimmy said, "I'll go in. If I see Jesus, I'll give him a paper."
Now, wait a minute. Point of order, Mr.
Yeah, I knew that was... I knew we were going to have a problem.
Were his eyes, were little Jimmy's eyes as watery as that gospel mission soup?
Very most likely, but Jimmy's having to sell papers to get, but if he sees Jesus, he's going to give him a freebie. Hey, Savior, the first one's free.
Jesus, here's a paper for you, my friend.
Come see me tomorrow, Jesus. Yeah. It just gets worse.
So he walked in and he sat down, and when the last altar call was given, Jimmy...
I love that guitar, man.
...laid his paper bag on the altar and lifted his watery eyes toward heaven.
Allergies. I'm thinking it's allergies, Scott.
Well, whatever the hell it is, he needs to consult a physician and... You know, or maybe he's been taking a prescription medication to deal with his lowly state, you know, the emotional toll it has taken. And those watery eyes are one of the many, many, many side effects of taking whatever that pharmaceutical is.
Meanwhile, Asa says, "My fucking ears are bleeding."
Well, maybe.
And Devin just said, "Damn it, I got tears in my beers."
There you go.
There's a tear in my...
Somebody needs to... He's got the papers. Jimmy needs to get somebody, a big boy, to roll him up a doobie.
Well, somewhere all over the planet, people are going, "God damn it, Bob, just play the damn song and get it over with. You and Scott and Punky, talk about something, please."
And he said, "Jesus, this is Jimmy. Jesus... This is Jimmy. I guess you might say it was the only way the little feller knew how to pray."
You got to remember, this is during the era of CB radio songs, so I'm surprised there's not a Breaker 1-9 "Jesus, This is Jimmy" in there somewhere. Yeah.
That's a hell of a hook on that song.
So from that day on, when Jimmy would go by the old gospel mission, he'd walk down the aisle. He'd lay his paper bag on the altar, and he'd lift his little face towards heaven. He'd say, Jesus, this is Jimmy. Jesus, this is Jimmy. Now what?
Apparently, Jimmy's, you know, hot ne ute, ite bray, if you one what I eat may. One trick pony, that Jimmy.
One day, Jimmy rushed to the little gospel mission.
He rushed.
The preacher was having a counseling session. And Jimmy didn't realize that he was disturbing anyone with his unusual prayer.
Unusual.
But the preacher came and took him by the arm.
I was going to say redundant, but, you know, who the hell am I?
And said, boy, can't you see that we're busy? Why do you keep interrupting us with that simple, unusual prayer?
Simple, unusual prayer.
Poor little Jimmy speaking from his heart.
Yeah, so it turns out the preacher's the jerk. Never mind Mommy and Daddy, who are off enjoying the nightlife at, you know, 12 in the afternoon. But no, oh, no. No, the preacher turns out to be the jerk in this tableau, which is
why. Mr. Preacher Man, I implore you, do not berate or degrade Jimmy. His life is hard enough.
Considering what preachers do to children now. I guess this was the G-rated version.
Jesus, this is Jimmy. Jimmy said, preacher, this is the only way I know how to pray. And I just want the Lord to know my name. But the preacher said, that's not a good reason, son. You'll have to stop it just the same.
Really? Well, I guess. I mean, hey, kid, you got a dollar? I mean,
those bastards are the pickiest, most judgmental sons of bitches I've seen in my life.
You know, Jimmy's doomed, right?
Jimmy needs to get his little skinny ass out of that place.
Well, I mean, you know, this is not going to end well.
No, they never do.
So one more time, Jimmy was pushed aside. He left with tears in his eyes, but he said, I can make it. And he turned away, not knowing it was his last mile.
Damn it.
It was a cold day, and Jimmy slipped from the curb. A big truck hit him on the run.
God damn it. You knew there was going to...
The preacher inside.
You knew it was going to be a truck or a bus or a snowplow or...
I was going to ask, there's got to be a truck. These songs are no good without a little boy, wayward parents, or a truck.
And he ain't said nothing about mama or trains. I mean,
or his dog. Well, he probably had to eat his dog. His dog ended up in the soup, probably.
All right, so let's pick it up.
Counseling session.
Oh, we're back at the counseling session.
Jimmy didn't realize that he was... Can't you see that we're busy? Why do you keep interrupting us with that simple...
Why has the preacher got reverb?
Jesus, this is Jimmy. And I just want the Lord to know my name. So one more time, Jimmy was pushed aside. And he left with tears in his eyes. But he said, I can make it. And he turned away, not knowing it was his last mile. It was a cold day, and Jimmy slipped from the curb. A big truck hit him on the run.
Now, was the truck on the run, or was Jimmy? I've never sorted that out, Scott.
Well, the truck conceivably hit and ran. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, well, the rain exploded with a mighty crash as we fell it. Yeah, truck on the run.
You know who needed to do that song was Edgar Buchanan, the guy who was on Petticoat Junction.
Oh, yes. Oh,
Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe, absolutely.
Preacher inside caught a glimpse of the scene, feeling bad about what he'd done. He rushed to the boy and took him in his arms, and to the nearest hospital they fled, and with doctors standing by,
waiting to find out if he had insurance coverage.
Yes.
The preacher there too. They heard little Jimmy speak from his bed.
Oh no.
Jesus, this is Jimmy. The doctor felt his pulse and turned to the preacher and said, his short life here on earth will soon be through. The preacher, with panic in his voice, said, my God, what can we do?
Well, you can start by not upbraiding little homeless children for saying, Jesus, this is Jimmy, when you're in the middle of a counseling session, you asshole. But, you know, that's just me. You know?
Well, they always time their question, what can we do? Always too late. And very,
yeah, well, right. They wait until there's nothing to be done.
That's right.
God almighty, what a bunch of jerks.
All of a sudden,
yeah,
the room lit up with a strange and beautiful light, and seemed that someone was about to speak, but that someone was not in sight.
Oh dear. I think we're going to be needing more, a whole lot more reverb in a minute, Scott.
Jesus is coming on the scene.
Get a tissue.
The preacher cried, if Jimmy could only be well, my God, how it would please us. And it was then the voice spoke in a kind, gentle way. Jimmy, this is Jesus. Jimmy, this is Jesus.
Jesus apparently was a little ways off from the microphone, but the reverb was cranked up.
Yeah, Jesus is a little weak there.
Jesus needs a little more gain on channel 4.
Put it up to 11, Jesus.
Suffer, little children, and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven.
Hey! And the rest of that's the chorus. The day follows
maybe,
night. Yada, yada,
maybe
yada.
That wasn't the real Jesus that was speaking there toward the end. Maybe that was the anemic, cheap Radio Shack equipment Jesus. not standing very close to the mic on top of it.
Yeah, that was Archer brand Jesus.
Yeah, that was that phony store brand Jesus.
I don't know why I just did that, but... but, you know, there's all kinds of theological questions that arise out of this. Randy says, couldn't the Lord have sent a lightning bolt or something?
Well, the
well, you know who was driving the truck?
Probably the boyfriend.
Hillary! It was Hillary! Oh, God, Hillary Clinton! Jesus Christ, Goldman Sachs! And she ran over poor little Bucket Jimmy! Oh, God damn! Oh, I'm so glad I voted for Bucket Jill Stein! Well, sorry.
Maybe it was Hillary, and Hillary was with the husband in Jimmy's parents' grouping, or maybe even the wife, or maybe both of them. Maybe there was maybe they were rushing on their way to a hot.
You know who that was? That was little Jimmy Ed Snowden.
this has been a most edifying song that you have shared with the listeners, and a lot of them won't get that. A lot of them will scoff and fun make. But there are some deep theological principles in that song, in the story of little Jimmy. And I'm glad that you took the time to share it, Bob, because I've been edified. I've been strengthened in my walk across the room. To switch the radio
across the room to the refrigerator, right? Yeah, I noticed Mercy. Punky's gone kind of quiet.
Punky has got his little birdie head bowed in prayer and reverence.
Well, see, it's kind of like the night the animals talked, Scott.
Oh man, I feel suddenly light, I feel suddenly hopeful, Bob.
There are songs that are burnt into my brain. This one is the worst because I had to play it every night for me.
Yeah. Now, what did the other, certainly you got calls and feedback from the other listeners. Were they, did they get burned out on it, or?
Oh, no, they loved it, too. Everybody loved Jesus, This Here's Jimmy. And of course, there was Squire Parsons singing Beulah Land, and the Happy Goodman family were always.
Oh, the Happy Goodmans are a trip.
Oh.
Who was the guy who did that song, If Jesus Came to Your House? The one about the magazines on the table. And,
oh, yeah, I do. And it made its way into sermons. And, you know, this is all Prayer Meeting Wednesday stuff, and we should probably stop. But I did have a note from Steve from Georgia Stan saying, Bob, you're killing us. Stop. Follow this with Porter Wagner, Jenny's Afraid of the Dark. No! Oh, well, yeah, I got, and from Jen in Australia, yeah, it's burned into your brain. Thanks, now it's burned into ours. All we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it.
Well, if nothing else, it's a trip down memory lane and an object lesson in what we have lost as a nation now that small-town radio does not offer. Now, granted, that's the weird, crazy aspect of small-town radio. But where do weird and crazy DJs of the future come from, if not these small markets? Right now, what we're getting, these small markets and media markets are having Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and Mark Levin and every other right-wing nutso piped in via satellite, okay? There's no place for young DJs to learn. And those who do work there as a board op at stations that are not automated, these people go on to bigger markets trying to be their own version of Rush Limbaugh or Savage or, you know, Hannity or one of these nut buckets. So the industry is doubly screwed in that good music radio is getting killed and, you know, with live talent that knows how to engage and compel and entertain, okay? And those that are coming forward out of these small stations are just Rush wannabes. So we're doubly screwed.
Well, it's all, like I said, it's all been industrialized. I was halfway kidding, but halfway not when I said, now you have to go to college and get a four-year degree in broadcast journalism to be able to sit there. But there's nobody queuing up records.
No.
I've thought for a long time it would be really neat if we ever could to bring in a couple of turntables and start collecting some vinyl and just jock some rock and roll radio.
And it's no wonder that everybody is misinformed and angry, those people who listen to that crap on the radio, because there is nothing uplifting or entertaining or lighthearted. I know you probably get emails from people saying, you know, get back on topic, Bob. Well, this is the topic. This is the topic. You know, we talk about...
How careful, you're stepping away from the microphone and sounding like a store-bought Jesus.
No, I have to try to take Punky in the other room, but he doesn't want to go in the other room. So,
suffer the little cockatiels to come unto me, Scott.
Yeah. Maybe...
But you're right. It is the topic because... You know, whatever happened to those little radio stations? Those little radio stations got bought up by essentially six massive multinational conglomerates.
Yeah.
And it has real consequences. I mean, you might not like the music, or you might, but it was a part of the community. You know, just like when Walmart comes along and puts your mom and pop hardware store out of business.
Yeah, and part of the, you know, if we're going to find the definition of how we found ourselves where we are now and what a possible solution or solutions to that quandary might be, step number one is going to be find out what happened and how we got to where we are and use that information to inform the conversation what's next. And Exhibit A in this thing is the last 30 or 35 years of deregulation, massive corporate influence, mega influence in the mismanagement of broadcast stations has presented us with the type of ongoing nut bucket conversation that has informed, so-called, these people who voted back in November, who voted Trump into office, at least by way of using the electoral system.
Well, and exactly, Scott, because what this boils down to is the reason the electorate are as mad as they are. Look, I think people are well-meaning when they try to identify with the economic anxiety of the poor little Klansmen. But the fact of the matter is, they're no worse and no better off than they were under dim leader, okay? But, as we remarked maybe a Friday or so ago, the first time I remember hearing Limbaugh would have been 1989, the summer of 1989, and by then he had penetrated to the Charleston, West Virginia market. Okay? So we're talking about, at this point in time, okay, let's just round it to 90. So we're talking about 26 years or more of media domination. And not because it won in a fair fight, but because it was the only game in town, because where people have been, okay, this is where maybe I try to get a little bit of your sunshiny disposition. I don't think people just walk around wanting to be pissed off. At least that was not the world that I remembered growing up in.
It's not a matter of intent or will. I think it's a matter of...
Yes.
Many of them have forgotten what it is to be unencumbered by...
Precisely. And so there's a generation of people who have been screamed at, whether it be on the radio or whether it be... O'Reilly and the rest of Fox and whatever else.
In the church.
And in the church, they've been, yeah. and they have been made to be in a perpetual state of anger. Now, let me sort of compare and contrast. I post stories that are sort of, you know, piss you off on Facebook, whatever. And I say what I have to say. But there are other people out there. I cherish the fact that I can open my feed, and I'll see where Carol Baker has posted something that just makes me hurt myself laughing, because the laughter is cleansing and the laughter is healthy. And then take a little laughter break and get back to the outrage later. I don't see right-wingers doing that unless there's something mean about it. Ho, 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 look at this. Look, you know, it'll be so good when we ain't got an ape in heels in the White House anymore. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, you just made my day, honey. You see the distinction I'm trying to draw here?
Yeah, and what passes for humor or even good-natured funnin' on the part of a lot of those folks is rather evil, mean-spirited at best.
Yeah.
And it's all rooted, like you say, in anger and either ignorance or being irretrievably stupid or being at the very best or very least misinformed or uninformed. And that's a toxic soup that we've been guzzling now for 20, 25, going on 30 years. Well, hell, take it back to when Reagan got in. That, to me, was the place where the groundwork began to be laid for where we are now. I know people used to deride Nixon, and he was in office when I very first started in radio in 73. He was on his way out, but he was still in. Okay.
But I mean, and so, like, you know, every week, even at the Gospel Voice, you know, we played the president's weekly radio address. I guess because patriotism. And, you know, on Sunday there were live preachers in there with their very we had their very own reverb for them. By the way, yeah. You have been awarded. Yep. You've been awarded a cowbell for store bought Jesus. Phony store bought Jesus.
Thank you.
That comes courtesy of Jen in Australia. Store brand Jesus.
Yeah.
It's not your high quality brand name, fancy label Jesus. That's the can with the white label and the black letters. It just says Jesus.
You inspired me, you know, when you said Archer, the house brand of Radio Shack. Are there still Radio Shacks? Do they still exist?
There are some, not many. Huh. The one I need is long gone. I'd drive 15 minutes to when I needed to get a new cable. Now it's a 2 hour round trip. But yeah.
And I know that we've gone on and had a lot of fun with this, but underlying that, like you say, it provides two opportunities, an opportunity for a breather. Okay. Which a lot of right wingers don't avail themselves of. Okay. And when they do or try to, it's some mean spirited, you know, bullshit, Michelle Obama in high heels ape kind of thing, which is not edifying at all. Okay, so there's that. We get a little breathing space here, but we also get a chance to put everything happening now into some greater context, because ultimately it's all got to somehow positively inform the conversation, what's next in terms of creating a future that works for us all. And that, to me, is the top mission. Having that conversation and your program contributes to that in ways that a lot of people, maybe even you yourself, don't fully realize. You get our noggins working, and you get our hearts and souls working. And if we are positively predisposed to begin with, okay, and even have some manner of speaking terms with our own inner Mr. Sunshine, each as an individual, we will get this thing lit. It may take a while. It may be very painful, you know, and long, the process, but we'll get there because the forces of good always win, in my book. Now, maybe I'm being Pollyanna-ish, but light always defeats darkness, prevails over darkness. Okay?
Well, I mean, okay, I'm pushing back on that. Does it really? I mean, okay, let's say yes, it does. But let's not ignore, Scott, the hell and damnation oceans full of blood that one has to wade through to get to the happy ending. Yeah, I'm thinking World War II.
Yeah,
I'm thinking
true.
Vietnam.
And I alluded to that a few moments
ago.
And
I'm still waiting for the happy ending in Iraq and Afghanistan, but yeah.
It's all part of a process. It's part of a bigger piece. And that's the frustrating part of it, because the best we're able to manage, even on our good days, is to stand in front of the sign in the mall that says, "You are here." Now, the "you are here" sign has no inherent power to get you where you want to be. It just gives you a sense of where you've been and where you currently are and where you want to be is, and gives you an opportunity to figure out what's next to get to that ultimate point. And yeah, it's not a pretty process. It's not an easy process, but it is a process. And that's where I try to come from all along. And it's very frustrating because we live in a society that is a microwave society, you know, as a gravy train society where you add warm water and stir and it makes its own gravy instantly right in the bowl. Well, change doesn't occur like gravy in a gravy train bowl. Change is a process that A, you've got to be part of to bring it into being. And B, you've got to stick with it, and you've got to take what victories as you can. Maybe that would have been a better way of putting light prevails over darkness. It does on a momently and an incidental or an incident-based manner.
Okay, then, yeah, and I'll work with you on that. Let's examine the current situation in that light. what does it take for good? This is your chance to get out the slightly cracked crystal ball. When does good triumph over evil in this situation? Because right now, evil is fucking ascendant. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I may have something that approaches an answer to that. In this current situation, where does light prevail over darkness? Because we certainly don't see it. We don't see the possibility of it. And that, to me, is the essence of the case that I'm making. The essence of the case that I'm making is such that it all begins with a conversation, okay, in which, see, you don't create your future from your past. You create your future from your future. Now, I know that sounds very cosmic and metaphysical.
Oh.
But if you're intending upon creating the future from the past, you're basically taking something and rearranging something and expecting it to work out to be something that works for you, when actually it's like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. The ship is still going down if you're taking that approach. To me, the more preferable approach is to, first of all, acknowledge where we are, okay, be clear on that, okay, and then be about the process, individually and collectively, of creating a future that works for us all out of nothing, because that's essentially what we're doing. If you work from nothing, you're working from the highest and purest medium that there is, because nothing is a space in which you create something and bring it into being. And I know that's very lofty and very confusing, and it may sound like 31 flavors of bullshit, but I'm telling you, there is merit and truth in what I'm saying, and it's easy to get bogged down, and I think we already see where getting bogged down gets us, and it gets us more of the same, I think. Does that make sense? 'Cause I, and I don't mean to evade or avoid the question that you
Well, and that's kind of where I'm going. You gave me an answer that was decidedly philosophical, and I want to work toward the practical.
Okay.
And there are people out there who have known me are going, "Oh yeah, Bob's going to be practical. This ought to be fun." But, I mean, let's say if, like Jimmy, Donald Trump was to step off the curb and be hit by a truck, would good begin triumphing over evil at that point? Would that be a material triumph of good over evil?
Well, for some people it might, because we see him as the embodiment of the problem.
But is the survival...
He's a symptom of what's going on.
If the problems we are facing are existential in nature, which is what I think is bothering a whole lot of people, even in jokes... Let's see, Kate McKinnon reprising her Hillary Clinton impression in a bit on this past Saturday Night Live, the scene with the cue cards from Love Actually.
Yeah.
She holds up one cue card that says, "No, really, this guy could get us all killed." And I can't tell you the number of times I've seen and heard people say that same thing. This guy could get us all killed. And I guess any president could, by definition. But this president is particularly worrisome because of his emotional and intellectual and mental instability, which seems to be on obvious display.
Well, yeah, and he has all along...
His venality, his graft, his grift. And so...
All along, he's made no secret of that. All along, he's made noises that suggest that is an actual outcome that could be expected if we go on as we are. And this is, see, now this is really going to get your head around this, and you'll be having real fun if you talk existentialist matters. What's the worst that could happen? Well, the worst that could happen, from my estimation, is that I am no longer around. Okay? But wait a minute. The worst that can happen is something that already has been. 22,834 days ago, I did not exist in any meaningful present form. Okay? From today until the date of my birth. Now, yeah, I probably existed in some way in the matter of gestation. But I'm talking...
If you just came up with that number while we were talking, I'm taking you to Vegas and we're counting cards, okay? You got me?
No, I didn't, because that was... Actually, that's what I called about, was to talk about what's the worst that could happen. And I didn't intend to take the long way around, but it apparently played out that way. 22,834 days ago, I didn't exist in a present, meaningful, viable, and contributory way, okay? So the worst that could happen, I don't get to exist anymore, I've already experienced, or it has been part of the previous equation. Okay, the question now becomes, behaving in a manner consistent, not the question, but the task is, to behave in a manner consistent to keep that from eventually happening, because that does not contribute to the creation of a future that works for us all. That is just more of the same. That's stuff that we don't want. We've got to focus on what we do want and then behave in a manner that's consistent with causing that to be. Okay? It's all a matter of being. The doing is almost secondary, because your doing arises out of your being, and the having, okay, is a natural result of your being and doing. You will then automatically have at some point that which is the highest, purest, most working expression of who and what you're all about. And like I say, it will numb your mind when you really are being with some of these notions. But to me, and I know that I've gone on way too long here, to me the crux of the situation is to be found in being, and out of the being, the doing, and out of the doing, the having, with the primary objective being the creation of a future that works for us all. And like I say, it won't be easy. It will be a process. There will be casualties along the way. We may not get there in my lifetime or yours, but one thing we do know and can agree on, the route that we're on is not the way to go. It just is.
Right,
it is the way that we're going.
And I guess I'm working, you're working macro and I'm working micro. Mm-hmm. Because I see... I've been watching things, and I know people put a lot of hope, I don't know why, in the Electoral College doing something that the Electoral College has never, ever done before. But now that hasn't happened, okay? And so we're going to move on next to, well, you know, he's got so goddamn many conflicts of interest, he's bound to get impeached. At which point I go, really? I mean, are we paying attention at all? You really expect this Republican Congress that is going to be up to its ass in soft cotton, getting everything it ever wanted? They're going to be troubled by some little trifling indiscretion, like shaking down the Kuwaitis to dump the Four Seasons in Washington, D.C., and have their National Day celebration at that nasty-ass pile of bricks, the Trump Hotel in D.C. I mean, really? Because, see, that did happen. I don't know if you saw that. I mean, it's pretty brazen. It's pretty bold.
Yeah.
But, yes, the Kuwaiti embassy, for years and years, has held it's like their 4th of July. They've held their Nation Day party at the Four Seasons Hotel in Georgetown.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that today.
Okay. Well, the Trump organization shook them down. And so they canceled with the Four Seasons, which is, as fancy schmancy hotels go, is pretty fancy schmancy. And instead booked it at the Trump International on Pennsylvania Avenue. Now it's interesting because that particular hotel recently got reviewed by an outfit called Luxury Travel Intelligence. And what they do is they go to fancy schmancy hotels and check in to see how nice they are. Well, referring to the Trump International on Pennsylvania Avenue, the old post office building, LTI finds the decor a little garish and more quantity over quality. Service is poor on occasions and lacks confidence. The whole experience seems a little forced, and therefore this place is not for the true discerning luxury traveler. In other words, it's a gauche pile of shit that only the rubes would dump out, shell out $800 a night for. The real high and mighties, no class and no quality when they see it, and that ain't it.
But well, I knew that building in the 60s, Bob, and basically what he's done with the help of the U.S. government, I forget which agency holds the lease, but basically Trump has leased a property, and he has presented Pennsylvania Avenue with a gold-plated turd, as what it amounts to in real estate terms. And now it is a high-priced, overrated gold-plated turd in terms of innkeeping, okay?
Well, exactly. And so it becomes a little bit weird. You know, the Kuwaitis are not above ostentation.
Oh, yeah.
But suddenly they did. And by the way, they're also shaking down the Bahrainis. Let's see, the Republic of Azerbaijan recently co-hosted a Hanukkah party at the Trump Hotel, despite the anti-Semitic undertones of the Trump campaign, as Think Progress writes. Rabbi Rick Jacobs, who's president of the Union for Reform Judaism, said it was a tone-deaf decision at best, naked sycophancy at worst. And everybody's going to get shaken down.
Well, and that you raised something.
And if a Democrat had done any, my God, you remember? Because you remember the '90s. You remember the oxymoron, chewing up another handful of OxyContin for the refreshing burst of flavor. And my friends, the flag is falling. These goddamn Clintons. Well, he doesn't say goddamn. These hopelessly corrupt, grasping, cheating Clintons have sold out the Lincoln bedroom, the precious, sacred, patriotic Lincoln bedroom to the political donor class.
Yeah, I remember. Isn't it interesting that Rush has spent more than a night or two in the very Lincoln bedroom that he derides the Clintons for selling, quote, close quote, selling, quote, close quote. See, with those guys, it all depends on who's doing it. If the GOP is up to doing that, well, there's nothing in the world wrong with it. It's all part of what happens in, you know, life in the big city. But a moment ago, you raised something that is really upon us. And that is a number of these people that Trump has nominated to be cabinet level and other functionaries in charge, a number of them will have to be confirmed by the Senate. So I'm kind of thinking it would be incumbent upon people like us to at the very least, contact our two senators, good, bad, or indifferent.
Oh, sure.
To let them know that, you know, we're on to the scam.
And just as a follow-up to that, when you contact them, Contact them at the local office. Don't bother calling D.C.
Yeah.
Call the local office because they'll actually pay a little more attention, according to the D.C. Congressional staffer types that I've heard from. Call the local office.
And when the confirmation process gets going hot and heavy, it'll be a lot easier to contact someone, a live human being, at your local district office, your local senator's office, than it will be going through the Capitol switchboard, because those bastards will be swamped.
Well, absolutely. But the other part of that equation is that the Democrats will be able to evince just as much outrage as Mitch McConnell permits them. Okay?
Well, yeah.
And this is the part of the program where, in order to appease the lefty left, I have to go, God damn, Chuck Schumer, that's miserable. Oh, God, Goldman Sachs, Jesus Christ, he had a cheese sandwich with Hillary Clinton once upon a time. Oh, my God. And, you know, that makes them happy.
See, and here's the quandary that I find myself in as a fun lover and truth seeker. Across the board, with very, very rare exceptions, I am down on all of the nominees that he's made thus far.
Well, look, I mean, you saw the news that broke over the weekend about Rex Tillerson, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
The guy is actually in a partnership, a personal partnership, with Russian oil and gas interests in a tax haven corporate shell in the Bahamas.
And that leads me to my quandary.
How do you get to be Secretary of State that way?
Well, but the quandary then becomes, if you're against all of the nominees that need to be confirmed by the Senate, there's no way that saying, I don't like any of them, pick again, is going to work. Are there a top three or four that we can focus on who are going to be the most insidious if they get in? I mean, that might divide and conquer may be our best chance at this point. It's just a matter of Tillerson has got to be one to be stopped, if that's possible. And there are a couple of others. Maybe that's the way to go. I don't know. I don't know what it looks like. I just know that the mechanism in terms of internally, out of which whatever we do can best be done. See, that's my limitation here. And like you say, that's the downside of the existential approach, because it'll inform the conversation, but it may not fully help you get to where you're going in the sense of working out a usable plan. And that's where the two sides have to come together, your practical approach and my whatever it is approach, taking the best of both.
We'll call it the metaphysical approach.
Okay, the metaphysical approach.
Out to me by Gerald, remember, he also gets to pick a whole shitload of federal judges and appeals court judges. It's not just Supreme Court justices.
I know. We have got our work cut out for us, okay? We truly, truly do. And we might have avoided this, but we didn't. So we are where we're at.
And you know that if the Senate tries to get froggy, Mitch McConnell, if he's in the mood for it, will just take their filibuster away from them. And remember, they can't filibuster because of what Harry Reid did. They can't filibuster plain old garden variety federal judges and appeals court judges.
Right.
Okay, that just happens. But, and I'm not trying to be the Debbie Downer of this whole set piece, but you got to remember, if you say the Democrats, you're also implicitly saying, Scott, Joe Manchin. Now, Joe Manchin is a Democrat because he is exactly where the Republicans want him to be.
Yeah.
Because as long as Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota are there, they can destroy any attempt to stop anything Republicans want to do. Even if the Republicans lose, let's say that, you know, it's that one in a billion chance where Susan Collins of Maine actually votes against the Republican majority. Well, that's okay. Joe Manchin will cancel her out. And they could lose another senator, and Heidi Heitkamp would cancel that senator out.
Yeah. Well,
so if they really, really want Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions the Third, or Rex Killerson Tillerson. Thank you, Arthur. They're going to get him. I want us to speak reality here. I mean, I'm down with calling your senator, make sure they put up the good fight, tell them to do whatever's necessary, filibuster, et cetera, et cetera. But I want us to understand the gravity of what is coming at us.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And, I've got a story here that might be beneficial for our consideration. Newton Leroy Gangrene, amateur paleontologist, gave a speech to the Heritage Foundation a week and a half or so ago. He said, "Something profound is breaking in the old order. A genuine revolution is building." And in the same speech, he had said that Donald Trump had given Americans permission to say Merry Christmas again.
God.
But the biggest thing that he said in that speech, and something that everybody should pay attention to, is that there's going to be a great effort to break out of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt model. And they are going to try to get it all. You know, I'm on record on this program saying, you know, they'll probably succeed at busting Medicare and Social Security because they will tell the current recipients that they're not coming for theirs. They're just fixing it for the rest of us so we'll have more freedom.
Yeah.
Well, now it appears they're coming for current recipients too, Scott.
Well, now see, that's where they're going to get a fight from me and millions of others, because there are millions of us, like what, 13, 16 million, 60 million, whatever it is on Medicare and Social Security. I mean, between retirees and disabled folks. And I am, whatever the number is, I am one of that number.
Do you remember the Affordable Care Act protest? Because I was there for some of those.
The teabag ones?
You remember the teabagger in her hover round with her sign that said, "Get your government hands off my Medicare"?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to make you feel bad or anything, but I wouldn't get too worked up expecting those folks to stand alongside you and protect your Medicare and your Social Security.
Well, you look at the popular vote numbers. If a fair percentage of the people who voted Democratic in this last election make their presence known, no matter what the GOP tries to do to change the current way of doing things or to knock the props out from under us, to the extent that we make our presence known and show them that we mean business and we're not going away, I mean, hell, that's what the fucking Tea Party did. And that was such a ginned-up, astroturf thing created by the right that you almost couldn't see straight from, you know, all the fingerprints on it of the organized, you know, super rich right, like the Koch brothers, et cetera, at all. It's, hey, listen, I'm fired up. You know, Obama used to say, fired up, ready to go. I am beyond fired up and ready to go. I am not going to take this lying down. And I know millions of others will not. And hopefully it'll be enough to at least put a dent in their mechanism or throw a wrench into it or whatever metaphor you want to use. But the prime thing not to do is to give up and lose hope and say there's nothing to be done, because that's a self-fulfilling.
No, yeah, I mean, if we're, and that's where I'm getting at. I think we have to be ready to be in the damn streets. Now, I don't know how you ask an 87-year-old Social Security recipient to get in the streets, but if they're really coming for all of it, then it might be time to break in a pair of walking shoes.
Well, chances are that person has a son or a grandson or a granddaughter or somebody who can act as a proxy on his or her behalf and get out there, and maybe with a sign with grandma's picture on it, saying, I couldn't be there, but the next generation is, and they've got a stake in this too. You know?
Yeah. You hope, but remember that. Well, and again, I'm not just trying to gainsay everything, but there's half of the eligible voting population who didn't vote. Some of those were suppressed, I have no doubt. But right. We have to acknowledge that there's a significant number of those people who probably would have voted for Trump.
Yeah, they probably would have. They probably would have. Well, listen, Bob, I see the old clock on the wall. I hadn't intended, believe me, to go this long.
And that's okay. I needed some help. I yesterday kind of made me very sad, sometimes we get at things from an oblique angle, and from that angle, maybe we see them a little bit differently. So, don't express any regrets, Scott.
Well, we got to talk about the good old days of radio. We got to experience Jesus, This Is Jimmy, and we got to talk about the current situation. I mean, that is a microcosm of great radio, something that doesn't hardly exist anymore, except for oases like your own and the Horn. So hats off to you. Where's my hat?
And by the way, Jen in Australia just said Scott was on fire tonight. Or was it Punky?
Well, Punky picked up on my vibes. I had to put him in the other room because he was starting to get as worked up as I am, and he's more noisy and shrill when he does it.
Oh, don't say shrill. They'll call you a misogynist.
I ought to fit him out with a little picket sign and a hat.
We'll
red,
work.
White, and blue.
We'll work for chicken feed, literally.
Yeah. I'll send you a picture if I ever get my little costume, or maybe I can modify an old Barbie outfit or something.
All right, Scott, you have a good evening, my friend.
All right, Bob, take care.
Bye now. And so the old-time radio hour comes to a close. We find ourselves deep in a fundraising hole, but not as bad as we could be. We have $280.23 to go. $280.23. By tomorrow evening, it'll be $480.23. And God, I hope it gets better quick. Bills are waiting payment. Thank you, Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus. Cletus is a good girl. She's a sweet puppy. Cletus gets a milk bone this evening for taking us down to $280.23 to go. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Time to get out of here and back tomorrow evening, prayer meeting Wednesday. Haven't checked out the menu yet. I'm sure it'll be yummy. Thanks to you all for joining in this little conversation, this ongoing conversation that's been, you know, a dozen years in the making. Thank you for supporting it. I wish the limousine liberals and the George Soroses would pick up the slack, but looks like it's up to us. We want independent media. We're going to have to fund it independently. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky, and thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.